परिपरा जी कचार्य सत्य सत्य शिशी मार्ग समय श्री भक्ति चरण सरस्वती स्वामी श्री प्रभु ठाकुर की जय नंदी कुड़ी वैष्णव की मुस्कान बीबी फाउंड चार श्री प्रभु पाठ की नमाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम को श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु निचनंद श्री द्वैत ग्राह श्रीवास श्री गौर भक्त बिंद की श्री शिवार कृष्ण कोप को बना चाहे हम कुंडार को निगरी गुबरान की श्री वृंदावन मथुराधाम की श्री नवरी मायपुराम की श्री जगन्नाथपुरी राम की कुंगमयी जुमुनमयी की भक्ति देवी चुस देवी की श्री गुरु परंपरा की डिवाइन ग्रेस श्री भक्ति विनंत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की श्री सद गोस्वामी प्रभु की ग्रंथ राज महा भागवत पुराण श्रीमद भगवतम की जय Gaur Premanandi Hari, all glories to the symbol devotees, all glories to the symbol devotees, all glories to the symbol devotees, all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga, glories to Srila Prabhupada, Maham Vishwamaraya, Krishna Pastai, Buddha Lishwam, Medha Bhakti Vedanta Shami, Nithi Nam, Namaste, Sarasvati, Devi Gaurav, and Charni, Pisishan, Devaki, Stad, Tarni. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nartam.
Presentation. Yes.
You have to introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name is Balaram Das, and I'm 12 years old.
And your mother is. Your proud mother is where? Right here. His very proud mother is standing there. Of course you are. Every good mother is proud of her. Very nice son.
Today I'd like to speak on the first canto, 11th chapter, 36, text 36 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Verses, although the queen's beautiful smiles and furtive glances were all spotless and exciting, and although they could conquer Cupid himself by making him give up his bow in frustration, and although even the tolerant Shiva could fall victim to them, still, despite of their magical feats and attractions, they could not agitate the senses of the Lord. So my main sentence that I would like to speak on is the queens could not agitate the senses of the Lord. So, Krishna, being Atmaram, he's completely satisfied. He doesn't need anything or anybody. But to expand his pleasure and his happiness, he expanded into all his devotees. So he really doesn't need their beauty. He doesn't need anybody's strength or anybody's anything because he has all the beauty, he has all the strength, he has everything. But the only thing he's interested in is our love towards him. So not just the queens couldn't agitate the senses of the Lord, but also an example is during the Rasa dance, when Krishna called the gopis to have the rasa dance, then the gopis were feeling a little proud that now they could have the association of Krishna. So then Krishna immediately left because what he's looking for is not the beauty, is not any other quality. He's looking for the love of his devotees. For an example, on my own experience on the Govardhan Parikrama, when you're walking and a cow comes by, and you pet her, you scratch her on the neck, but as soon as she goes, then you don't get all mental about it, and you don't start crying, oh, the cow left, So you just feel completely satisfied. So Krishna is complete, and therefore he does not need anything. So, but we are not complete as jivas. So we're not complete. And the only thing that can make us complete is Krishna, by having association, by serving him through his devotees. That's the only thing that can make us complete or have a feeling of completeness. So in this world, generally, many people are missing something in their heart. So generally what they're missing from within, they try to get from outside. For example, they're missing opulence. So from outside, they try to get money. They try to get different jewels, big houses and everything. Or they're missing strength, and they do push-ups, they try to do some yoga exercises. But actually, the only thing that can fill in the gap inside the heart is Krishna. So basically, what I wanted to mention was that the Krishna is completely satisfied, and he has all the opulences, so he doesn't need anything or anybody, but just to increase his happiness, he expanded into his devotees, and he's interested in their love for him. Hare Krishna.
There's a question.
Could you, from what you just said, could you speak about the quality of mercy of the Lord? Based on what you just said?
So, Krishna is being very satisfied, but he doesn't need anybody, but out of his mercy, he expanded into his devotees, and so that he can give them service, so that they can serve him.
So that offering that he makes to them, that you can serve me, that you can have relationship with me, that is all by his mercy.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very good. So therefore we are always completely dependent on Krishna's mercy for everything. Because actually, somewhere, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it may be in the Bhagavad or somewhere else, but he makes a statement that when the jiva turns away from Krishna, when he makes that decision, you know, exercises his tatastha shakti, choice, power of choice. That's the only power that we have, actually, as marginal living entities. That's our shakti. That's why it's called tatastha shakti. Shakti means potency. And this is our potency. Otherwise, we're totally dependent on the Lord. But we can choose to surrender to him, or we can choose to try to ignore him. When you hear Prabhupada in his lectures, carefully listen to his English lectures, how he pronounces the word, as we say in usual English pronunciation, ignorance. But you know how Prabhupada pronounces it? Ignorance. He puts the stress on the second syllable, ignore, which is very interesting, because it's actually etymologists who analyze the English language, they also say the same thing, that ignorance, the root is to ignore. So it's not exactly that you don't know, that we start off not knowing that there is God, but we just decide to ignore him. And then we become covered over by his shakti, who punishes us for that. Maya Devi says, if you ignore my Lord, then I'm going to push you down into avidya karma. Avidya karma samgyakya, that's in the Vishnu Purana. Chitta shakti sa uchite. So the third shakti, there's the Vishnu shakti, Chitragya Shakti, which is us. Vishnu Shakti is para. We are also para, transcendental. And the third, the qualities of the Maya Shakti are avidya karma. That we have to, Prabhupada said, hard work. Karma means hard work. Avidya in ignorance. We don't know what we're doing, and yet we're struggling to get it done. We don't have any idea what we're doing, but we're struggling very hard to get it done, whatever it is. This is the state of being in Maya. And this is a state of punishment, and this is because we're ignoring Krishna. So that is ignorance. So we have made that deliberate choice at some point. Prabhupada said that we cannot trace it back. He would say this phrase, from time immemorial. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains it in perhaps more conceptually scientific terms by saying that decision was made. Since it was made before we came to this material world, then it was made out of the purview of time. You see? So it is not possible to find the beginning. That's why karma is called anadi. Because the root of karma, the mula of karma, is outside of time. It was made in our transcendental position, in the Vishuddha Sattva position. So, anyway, whatever position that is rightfully ours in the spiritual world that we are now endeavoring to return to by this process of Bhakti Yoga, it is there by Krishna's mercy. We have even, in a sense, lost it by Krishna's mercy, because another meaning of the word Maya, Prabhupada says, is mercy. Yes, this was the point I was going to make, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says somewhere, that Krishna, being the Supreme Ishwara, it is within His right. As soon as we make that decision, I will not serve Krishna, I will ignore Him. He has the right and He has the power. He could do this. He has the right and He has the power to will this particular jiva to cease to exist entirely. That's why I told you the other day that there is matter, there is spirit, and above them both is Krishna. So He has such power. Even though we like to think of ourselves, yes, I am also eternal. No one can take away my eternal. Krishna could take away your eternality. Krishna could cause you to cease to exist like that. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, by rights, if we consider Krishna just as Ishwara, as autocratic ruler, that's what a king would do. That's what a king would do. Cut off your head immediately. You don't obey me? That's in Alice in Wonderland, the Red Queen. Off with their head! Off with their head! But why isn't Krishna doing that? Because He's so merciful. So there is this Maya, and she takes us over when we have made that wrong decision and puts us in this present situation of misery, so we suffer. And then after perhaps many, many millions of lifetimes, then we begin to reflect, why am I suffering? And try to find solution. And there's a Upanishad, I think it's called the Pingala Upanishad, which says that unless one is a seeker of the truth, one can never achieve liberation. You see? First, there must be from our side the sincere search for the truth. The answers to the questions like Sri Sanatana Goswami asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Kayami, who am I really? And why am I suffering this tapatraya? And how can this tapatraya be removed? This is sincere questioning. So we have to come to that point, and then by Krishna's mercy, by the process of Bhakti Yoga, going through the stages of Sambandha, abhidyaya prayojana, we can come back out of this maya and return to our original position in the spiritual world, which is also simply His mercy, another manifestation or the supreme manifestation of His mercy. So it's very important for us to understand this, because without Krishna's mercy, we have no standing at all. You know, understanding? You know this word. It means to be grounded in knowledge, to be grounded in reality, truth, understanding. You see, you are standing on something, on some foundation that is real. That's the sense of understanding. You have understood something. Now you are standing, you see, in that realization. So we have no standing. We cannot. This is the wonderful mystery of Krishna, that He even indicated by His name. If you take even the name just meaning black, black is something impenetrable. Vedeshu Durlabham. You may become master of the Vedas, but you cannot understand Krishna, because He, in this sense, is like a black hole. They have this, modern astronomy has this idea of black hole that sucks in everything. Light, even. You cannot possibly see it. You see, because it is so powerful, it sucks light into itself. So any light you shine on it just becomes sucked in, and there's nothing to be seen. So Krishna, like that, in the sense of blackness, he is the dark behind all dark things, all mysteries, all impenetrable puzzles, you see, that we break our... You see, we... Human beings, we get caught up in so many intellectual difficulties, ask so many obscure questions. But behind all that is Krishna Himself, who is the greatest mystery. Vedeshu Durlabham. Even you know all the Vedas, you cannot understand Krishna. That the light of the Vedic knowledge will not penetrate the depth of His personality. But Adurlabham Atma Bhakta. If one becomes His devotee, then by His mercy, He reveals Himself. You see? Everything by His mercy only. So it's so important for us to understand this by His mercy, accept it by His mercy, and act upon it by His mercy. We accept it by His mercy. How? By coming into the association of devotees. We understand by Shravan, by hearing, with Shraddha, just like we see all this theme of this Bhagavatam class is questions and answers. So the Shraddha is being nurtured to Nishta by this process. And then at Nishta stage, Nishta, your faith is then immovable. And the test of that, one of the great tests of that, I think I gave the other day, some other earlier day, the example of you meet some big Mayavadi scholar who knows Sanskrit backward and forward, knows, or some Sahajiya pundit who knows every verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam by heart, and also the five main commentaries by heart, and he can go on and on and on talking and quoting, and you see, intellectually, scholarly, you're totally outclassed, but Nishta means you will never be moved by whatever he says, because your faith is firm. And that's the goal of our class. But Nishta also means that one can be a part of this Krishna consciousness movement. Because it is beyond anartanivritti, you see. We have trouble with others because we see in them anartas. Now why do we see anartas in the hearts of other devotees? Why do those anartas agitate us? As Prabhupada said, it takes two bangles to jangle. That's a nice poetic expression. Women wear on their wrists bangles. So if she wears just one, there's no jangling sound. But if she wears two, then you'll hear jangling. So jangling means argument, disagreement, some, you know, don't understand this person, can't get along with this person. Why is that? Oh, because he has this fault, he has that fault, he has so many faults he has. So many faults you see. Yes, so many faults. Please write them down. All right, I'll write down them. 108 faults that person has. So how are you able to know these faults so well? Because you have them in your own heart. That list is the list of faults in your own heart, first of all. And because they may or may not be in that other person. You see? Because this is, when I talk with Nitai Goranga, are you here today, Prabhu? No, he's not here. We often talk about this. It's one of the major philosophical questions, you know, bedevils all intellectualism, is where subjectivity ends and objectivity begins. Where what I think ends and what really is begins. And in our conditioned state, we can never find that line. You see? So you can be sure. This you can be sure of. If you see fault in another devotee, you're able to see it only because it may be there, it may not be there, but you're seeing it, you're sensing it, because it's actually there in your heart. Objectively, it may not even be in him. You may be, there's something in psychology called projection, you see, where you think a person is acting in a certain way because that's the way you would act, you see, under a certain mentality. But he could be acting in that way. You don't see his mind completely. Other person, other reason. Just like, I don't know if it was here. Someone was recently telling how Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, he used to chant his japa on the veranda of a prostitute. Was that brought up in this class? No. So Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, because he didn't want to be bothered by others during his japa, he would go to the house of a prostitute and sit on her veranda like a customer. And he would chant his japa. And people would go by and they would be shocked and they would start to have doubts about this Gaurakishore Das Babaji. Maybe we should not associate with him. But that's exactly what he wanted. I don't want to associate with you nonsense people. I want to be absorbed in the holy name. You see, so they're thinking, oh, he's sitting there because of why they would sit there. You see? They're thinking he's doing that for the same reason they would do it. But his reason was, so we cannot see the mind of others. But the fact that they are capable of doing such a thing, then they project it on such a saintly transcendentalist as even Gaurakishore Das, but that's Vaishnava Aparad. This is how we commit Vaishnava Aparad. So this is also means that we don't have nishtha. We don't have firm faith. If we see Gaurakishore Das Babaji sitting on veranda of prostitute, if we see Vamsi Das Babaji smoking hookah, blowing out a big cloud of smoke and calling out, Bhakta Vatsala Hari! Then we think, what kind of Vaishnava is this? And that is our problem. Because these anarthas are lying in our heart. And so in our dealings with one another, as devotees, you see, we're always running into the same trouble. Projecting our anarthas on others. So nishtha means to go beyond that, to real sangha. It is on the nishtha platform that real Vaishnava sangha can be relished. You see? Because what follows nishtha, ruchi, and then asakti means attachment. And this is all in terms of namasankirtan, which means congregational chanting, together with devotees, not nirjan bhajan, which Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in his Vaishnava K is completely rejected. Utterly rejected. There is no nirjan bhajan. You may say, well, such and such great acharya did this in the past. It is not for you. You see? Just like Lord Shiva, he drank an ocean of poison. That is not for you. Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. You cannot do that. And similarly, we cannot do nirjan bhajan. We may like to, but why? Analyze why you are attracted to do Nirjan Bhajan is because you can't get along with other devotees. And that is not a reason to do Nirjan Bhajan. That is not a reason to do Nirjan Bhajan, simply because I'm having some argument with the Mataji next door, therefore I want to become, you see, Babajini. Have no friends. You see, that is simply enviousness. So, on this, we have Nishta, and that's what Bhavananda Prabhu was telling me. He told me about once he made a vow in his mind that I will never, ever associate or serve with such and such one God brother. He made this vow because he had some big trouble with him. And then later on he realized what a nonsense thing, what a nonsense idea to nourish in my mind. Because he saw how Prabhupada was so equipoised. Prabhupada was so expert in bringing together disciples from all different kinds of backgrounds and expert in adjusting even the process for them individually, like my beloved God brother Brahmananda. He says, if you know Brahmananda, very big body. So even when he was young man, he was very stout and strong. He had been wrestler. So Prabhupada asked him, although he is actually Brahmananda's softest, hearted person you could ever meet, very gentle, very humble, but strong physique. So Prabhupada asked him, and so what were you? What was your occupation? And he said, I was wrestler. And Prabhupada said, oh, then you must have minimum 8 hours rest. Of course, the standard rule is 6. But Prabhupada said, for you, 8 hours. You see? So Prabhupada was so personal, so expert to bring all kinds of people, give them a place. This is mercy. You see, this is mercy. And just like Jesus Christ in the New Testament, he said, whatever you see me doing, it is actually the Father doing. I am simply following my Father. You see? You see, what I am doing before you, this is the mission of God. This is God's own business. So similarly, the spiritual master, Acharya, he's simply showing us how Krishna deals with his devotees. You see, as in this chapter 11, Krishna's entrance to Dwarka so nicely, so beautifully illustrates that, as we've already discussed with the prostitutes coming, Krishna didn't sneer at them. What are these sinful women doing approaching me? Get them away, drag them away. Calling his guards and with their spear points, shoving them away. Get out of here, fallen woman, go, go, go. No, they could come forward and offer in devotion to the Lord. And it's very clearly said he had very specific and appropriate response to every type of offering. It's just, this is culture, you see. And then everyone feels a part of Dwarka. They feel they have place in the Lord's city. They're protected by Him. They have relationship with Him. And that's why I'm devoted to this very day, actually. I mean, to speak personally. It's only because when I first met Srila Prabhupada, that he went out of his way. Other devotees noticed this and commented on it. That he went out of his way in just small ways. They were not dramatic. It's not even so interesting me for to relate the specifics of the stories, but I just want to make this point. That he made that effort to show me that I know who you are. You are my servant. You are my disciple. I am your spiritual master. We have a relationship, whether we are physically together or not. That relationship is always there, and I want you to serve me. I don't want you hiding behind, you know, the coverings of so-called shyness and nervousness and, you know, thinking I'm unable, thinking I'm, you know, this is not my position to come forward and serve my guru. Prabhupada cut through all that. Prabhupada showed me that's all just false. These are just different forms of false ego. You see. Because humble, when we talk about humble, what is a humble? Is humble a noun? Have you seen us humble walking down the street? Do humbles grow in the garden? Do humbles fly in the sky? No, humble is an adjective. There must be a noun that humble qualifies. And what is the noun? You must know this, please. Someone knows the noun?
Devotee?
Devotee, yes. That's the correct answer, but I'm actually looking for another answer.
Servant.
Servant, yes. Now, how can you have a humble? See, what is a humble? So this is what happens. This is how the false ego tricks us. The false ego, in the name of being humble, says, I can't serve. See, I'm too fallen, I'm too unable, I'm too this, I'm too that, therefore I can't render service. You've just been tricked by your false ego. You're a hamkara. And Prabhupada showed that's the one, such, you know, for my own spiritual life was such a valuable lesson. That I want your service. You may be qualified. I was definitely not qualified, but Prabhupada was aggressive. He was reaching out. I want your service. You are my disciple. I want your service. And that's why I'm still devotee. You see? You go through 30 years of ISKCON. You see many things happen. It's not so easy. And many of my, you know, dear God brothers and sisters that I used to, I have fond memories of, they're no longer members of this movement, and I miss them. I miss them, but they miss something too. You see? It's unfortunate, but they miss something that Prabhupada offered to all of us. And that is a position of servant, humble servant. And that's the real meaning of humility. You cannot separate humble from servant. And all this is by Krishna's mercy. And our dear 12-year-old pundit, Balaram, who I must say, he's, of course, I'll get a cake tomorrow from his mother for saying that. But he actually is one of our really nice students in the school. I mean, so much. I feel so blessed to have his association. He's always inspiring us. You see, he expresses these simple realizations, but they're very deep. He's a very deep-thinking young man. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark, for letting me speak.
Okay, now it's really time for you to talk, Maharaj. I just yapped away half the session.
Sure. Okay.
That's the rest belongs to you.
Yeah. Well, I think we've finished.
I will say no more.
Okay. Done that. And I would say one of the questions was that Srila Prabhupada said, no enemy from outside our movement can stop us. The problem will come from within our ranks. Unquote. If we cannot cooperate, is this tantamount to holding back, stopping the natural progress of ISKCON? So I would say is in what was discussed just now, that's the principle. That the cooperation then is there if that humility is there, that service attitude is there. Because we see we're serving Krishna. So therefore, it's what is good for him. The tendency is we always look at what's good for us. So then we start these, you know, rivalries or fighting or, you know, all these different things. But if this principle is understood, then basically, then there'll be no, this difficulty will not come. Because from the outside, it means there's no one, the living entities outside, even though they may be materially powerful, still they're powerful within illusion. You know, just like sometimes you are going and, you know, all you can see is a little bit of a ripple on the highway when you're going from the heat or from the water. Or sometimes it's some very big manifestation of some illusion. But it's still just illusion. And Krishna consciousness, even no matter how small, is reality. So you can have a huge expanse of, you know, darkness, but if you put one little candle, it still illuminates the place. So, therefore, nothing from outside can stop the movement. It can make it so you, you know, change this, change that, but Krishna is always doing that. You know, it's like you could have arranged it. You just go in there, the Pandavas are there, one side, and then the Kauravas on the other, the conch is blown, and, you know, Arjuna pulls out some weapon, you know, shoots it, the whole Kaurava army is finished. You know, it could have worked like that. He did that to the... He did that to the, was it, Nachiketas? Nabita Kavachas. Mm-hmm. And some of these others. 60,000 of them, one arrow, he finishes them off.
They were from outer space.
Right? Yeah, yeah. And they were hiding under the ocean, right? Yeah. And Agastya had to, Agastya's the size of a thumb. So someone had to volunteer to drink up the ocean so that he could shoot them. So then Agastya did that. Yeah, so here's... So then, you know, aliens, right? You know, living under the ocean. So Nibata Kavachas. The Nibata Kavacha men. So
Arjuna is the hero.
Yeah. So it means he does that. Or when he defeated the Kauravas when they came to Virat, then they came. And he was out, there was the full Kaurava army. You know, all the great Maharatis were there along with all the, I think they went maybe with an Akshahini, they went with a very big army. Arjuna went out there alone. One guy dressed up as a eunuch, right? You can imagine this chariot comes riding through the field and there's this person on it all dressed up as a lady with all these gaudy, bright-colored cloths.
And, what
you know,
they called it, a cross-dressing.
Yeah.
Cross-dressing.
Yeah.
Transvestite.
Yeah, just driving along with this kid, you know, driving the chariot who's so disturbed, you know, he can't drive. You know, so they don't have Krishna on the chariot. And he comes out there, and immediately when he comes, then they start to send the cows, and then he cuts off the cows with his arrow, means cuts them off their going away, running away, and makes them run towards the city. And then just stops everyone with one arrow, he puts them all to sleep, except Bhishma Dev. You can't do that to him. But everybody else was out. So then, but the battlefield, the Kurukshetra, didn't go so smoothly. You know, so it's all Krishna's arrangement. So these different things are there so that we can fully engage our abilities in Krishna's service. So obstacles like that are created to increase our affection for Krishna, our endeavor for Krishna, like Krishna leaving the rasa dance. That was to increase. You could see it as an obstacle, but it's Krishna's arrangement. But if the devotees don't cooperate, then that's we become overpowered by our own illusion. Because the outside illusion can't do it. There's no way. There's no possibility. You know, you can bring in, okay, we have this candle here and we're going to bring in, you know, the whole, you know, universe of darkness to put it out. It can't happen. It doesn't matter how much darkness, the candle will still be there and still will illuminate.
Can I make little
yeah,
little
yeah, please. Sure, why not? We got 21 minutes here.
Mouth shut, but I just want to say that there is a history that is actually written in Persian. It's the Muslim point of view of the armies of from Persia, how they were able to invade North. It would be Western,
yeah, no,
Northwestern India. And They were trying for 400 years. And there were just four cities on the border. And they were coming, you know, the Persian army, that was the remnants of the vast Persian empire before it became Islamic. They were actually Zoroastrians, so it was a form of Vedic culture. This Zoroastry is even made mention in Rig Veda as Jaruta. Yeah, Jaruta. He was a sage, descended from the sun, and always had the favor of the sun, even though he was philosophically a little wacky. But the word Iran, which is a modern name for Persia, comes from Aryan, Arya. It's Arya Desh, and Prabhupada said that. This is also Arya Desh. The Persian people actually originally belonged to Vedic culture. And the religion that they had before they became Muslims was fire sacrifices. And the Parsis in India still do some. Anyway, so there is written in Persian a record. And so for 400 years, they were trying to cross the border into India, this mighty Persian army, which had become Islamicized. And four towns practically, the armies of four towns on the border stopped them every time for 400 years. But then what happened was, inside one of those towns there was some politics, and one brahmana became dissatisfied. So he came over to the Persian side, and he told them about all the defenses inside, just out of vengeance, because he felt himself insulted by his own people. And it was with the help of this brahmana that the Persians could then break through the Indian border and then conquer North India. And then you have the Mughal dynasty, Akbar, etc., 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 all that followed. But for 400 years, four border towns were keeping out, because they were unified. They were able to keep out one of the mightiest armies in the world at the time. And the only reason they failed was because of internal politics. So, and that's from the Muslim point of view. That's not from the Vedic point of view. That's in the, the Shahinama, I think it's called. It's some Persian history of how India was invaded.
That probably makes that statement, is how well we cooperate is our affection. Because that means then, because affection means you do something for another person. So then we're doing it for that other person, so how we can cooperate, then that's important.
Srila Prabhupada didn't say destroy, he said stop, or it was destroy.
You can't destroy, you can stop. Because the point is the movement is going on. 10,000 years it goes on, that's it. What can be stopped is the particular manifestation that we're involved in. You know, because the point is it's going to happen. Prabhupada also made this comment. It's going to happen. It's just who's going to get the credit? Who's going to take part? That's all. So if we want to take part, then we cooperate, and then we're part of it. But if not, it will go on. It means sometimes we see and a personality leaves or this or that, and then things go down.
Slow.
But the movement will go on. It's just a matter of time. Like one example, you know, bright example of this. You know, why Prabhupada is also very strong in the BBT as a separate entity than ISKCON, because if you have the books, then you have the movement, is, you know, you go back quite a ways. You know, it would have been still during the communist time, that when the whole Krishna consciousness was underground in Russia, and devotees were traveling on, you know, one of their famous, you know, seven-day trains from one side of the country to the other, you know, like that. We think it's bad enough here, 24-hour train, right there, 7 days. You know. So, and the devotees were sitting there on the train, and this man comes up to them, you know, just dressed, doesn't look like a devotee at all, anything, and starts preaching to them, about Krishna consciousness and Bhagavad Gita and all these things like that. And, you know, and then devotees were kind of intrigued. Where is he from? What is that, this and that? He'd never met devotees. He didn't even know devotees existed. He didn't know that there was ISKCON. He had just come across some copy, because they used to photocopy the books. They were, you know, didn't have the books. Of Prabhupada's books, get a Gita or something. And in there, he was convinced by the book, and Prabhupada says, you must preach, you must do Sankirtan, you must distribute these books. So he himself would photocopy these books and then go around and try to get people interested in them, you know. You just try to get like this. So that's the whole point, is the mission will go on. No one should be so proud that we can stop the mission or someone else can stop the mission. No. It will go on. It's just a matter if we want to be part or not. And Krishna is so kind and so merciful that if anybody has even the littlest inclination or interest, then he makes that arrangement. And then we can be part. But if we don't want to be part, then sadly, you know, we move on the side. It makes it look like, then it makes it, okay, then we could do this to make it better, or we could cooperate better, or this devotee could think, well, I should, you know, take this up again, or you know, something like this. So he gives that opportunity. But in any case, it will go on. That's the whole point.
It's the finest distinction between upadhi and our real identity is the line of, that is known as pratishta. They're mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, six great obstacles to spiritual progress. And so the most formidable is pratishta, which Prabhupada translates as pride in being a Vaishnava. You see, because we have the best philosophy, we have, Prabhupada used, I remember one lecture, he said we have the best philosophy, we have the best mantra, the best music. I think he said we have the best recreation. See, even what we want to just, as they say, kick back and relax. We even have the best way of doing that. We, after taking prasadam, we'll sit back and, you know, tell stories of Krishna, devotees, Prabhupada. You see, even our periods of relaxation. It is nectarian. So everything is so nectarian, but if it goes, as we have this American expression, if it goes to your head, if you start to get a big head, oh yes, this is the best, means I am the best, then this becomes pratishta. And pratishta is cause of fall down from devotional service. So in this way, you see, Vaishnava then becomes, even Vaishnava becomes an upadhi. You see? Even Vaishnava becomes upadhi. That's why, I love this. There's one devotee, disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who served him when he was a small boy. Dola Govinda Shastri, and was his name. And at the time of the you know, when after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati left, so he was a boy. He was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's some boy that had come to the mat and had been assigned to do personal service. Just like one of these boys may bring Maharaj his pot or his set up his bed. So he was doing services like that. And Dola Govinda Shastri has many wonderful stories to tell about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Bhaktivikash Maharaj knows him, and related some of these stories. Really interesting. Anyway, because he was so young, when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur departed, so he was not at all prepared for what followed. All the politics, which eventually resulted in the literal shattering of his spiritual master's institution into pieces, different pieces controlled by different sannyasis. And this so disturbed him and depressed him that he no longer wanted to accept the upadhi, because in his view, the whole Gaudiya Math had become drowned in upadhi Buddha conception, you know, just designations. Who is guru, who is sannyasi, who is this, who is that, external designation. So he so much wanted to rid himself, because he found that so troubling, that he used to, he lives in Puri. So he used to appear on the street sometimes. He would deliberately be seen, let himself be seen by his godbrothers, other members of Gaudiya Math, with a lit cigarette between his fingers. He would just light the cigarette and walk down the street like this. He wouldn't smoke it, but he walked down the street like this, so that everyone would say, oh, he's fallen. We should not associate with him, which was exactly what he wanted. He wanted to just rid himself of this upadhi, you see. So it is even possible for even Vaishnava, you know, the outward signs of a Vaishnava, just to be an upadhi. And you were talking about, you know, Lord Chaitanya's movement will go on. It's just, Prabhupada said, it's just a question of who gets the credit. You can get the credit, he said to his disciples. You can get the credit. But even if you fall back and don't take this opportunity, still his movement will be successful. Someone else will get the credit. And I remember always when Prabhupada was discussing the Varnashram College in those walks in Vrindavan, talks for several days. And someone was asking about whether this training in Varnashram would be for the ISKCON devotees. And Prabhupada said, ISKCON FISKCON. So even, although this is Prabhupada's movement, but you see, even Prabhupada himself, ultimately, his attitude was, if you're going to make ISKCON into just another upadhi Buddha, that I'm a member of ISKCON, and here we are doing this, because Prabhupada's vision was whole world. You see, so that's why he was discussing these principles of Varnashram, not just for ISKCON. ISKCON devotees will be the teachers of it, but the world, it should spread throughout the world. And that is the meaning of Varnashram. You can't have, it's actually, it doesn't work. You see, it doesn't work, the very conception that Varnashram will be limited to some certain group. And then beyond, there'll be this ocean of mleches and, you know, chandalas. This is exactly what ruined India, Prabhupada said, because the Brahmins were not liberal. The Brahmins could not see when the Muslims started to come, and first the Greeks started to come, and then the Muslims started to come. All these untouched, the Brahmins couldn't handle it. And so they just started, you have been sprinkled by water? From the hand of Muslim, then you drink boiling hot ghee till you're dead. And so the person would say, well, better I become a Muslim then. And so the whole Varnashram was undermined in this way, because if Brahmins, Prabhupada said Brahmin means liberal. They had no liberal vision. They were sectarian, you see. So when this sectarianism creeps in, that's why Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati says, what is it? He gives this expression, the most devilish, something like the most satanic or devilish creation in this world is organized religion. And Lord Chaitanya's movement has absolutely nothing to do with organized religion. The whole concept of church is completely alien to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. And I know for a fact this is one of the statements that devotees today in ISKCON really, they don't know how to understand. Because we ourselves have become somewhat conditioned to this institutionalism too. That's not to say, like Maharaj was saying at his class yesterday, was it yesterday or day before Sunday, you were making some clarifications. Please do not conclude that because I've said this, that I'm saying we should now dissolve ISKCON and all become Babaji's or something. Or, you know, just... There must be institution for preaching, but it should not become an upadhi, a sect. Just another sect. Okay.
In other words, the mission, it's a purpose. There's a goal that's trying to be gained from it. And the institution can support that. So therefore it's useful, because the conditioned soul must have religion. So it's either you give him or he'll create his own. You know, it's like even you have a gang. They have their own religion. How they talk, words they use, how they greet each other, how you get into the group, how you maintain, what's the hierarchy, everybody's duties. It's they create their own religion. So that's going to happen. So the form of it then is to support the actual mission. But the mission is what is ISKCON, because ISKCON is what's created by Srila Rupa Goswami, the Vishva Vaishnav Rajya Sabha. That is Rupa Goswami's formalized form of devotees' association with each other. The Vishva Vaishnav Rajya Sabha is where the senior Vaishnavas, they associate together, and in this way then they basically establish the proper, progression of the movement together. So this was always there in Vrindavan, you know, especially at Radhakund, and whoever was the senior Vaishnav, they were considered the president of the Vishva Vaishnav Rajya Sabha. And so then Jiva Goswami formalized this, you know, gave the name into something that it was understood that this was going on, so the devotees would get together. If there was any difficulties, then it would be worked out. After Lord Chaitanya left and the Vaishnavas came together at Ketari, and then Janavadevi then cleared various doubts and that had come up. And so, you know, it was a regular thing that was there. Jagannath Das Babaji, he was considered the head of the Vaishnavas. Like this, so it's just the thing. So if we look at it, that's always been there. This is the mission. So we talk about the mission of Rupa Goswami. So ISKCON, then, taken from the terminology is taken from, Prabhupada said, from a cue in from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur about Krishna Bhavanamrita, about Krishna consciousness. Rupa Goswami, okay, Krishna Bhavanamrita. But we also look at it, Vishva means world or international. Sabha means society. And Vaishnav Raja means the king of the Vaishnavas, or that's Krishna. Right? So we can see the similarity there in the name. So it's a mission. And so this is the particular form that Prabhupada established to make it work very smoothly. You know, the machineries of the mission. So the machineries themselves should not be mistaken that is the mission. No, they are the tools of the mission. And for the conditioned soul, the tools are very important. Therefore, we have like that. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, even though he made those comments, he had a very organized machinery. Like that, very, very organized. And Srila Prabhupada, in the same line, created that. The GBC was created by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The name, Governing Body Commission, that is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's terms. That's not Prabhupada's. So that's what he said. You all work together cooperatively. You form this GBC. You work cooperatively together and push on the mission. Like that. So that would be, if you really wanted to say, the only difference between the Gaudiya Mutt and ourselves, because philosophy is the same, everything's the same, is we operate under GBC, they don't. The GBC is higher than the acharya, the gurus, the leading preachers. Gaudiya Mutt, it's not. That's the only difference. Otherwise, same philosophy, same books, same everything. So it's this form of taking the mission, then it's important. But at the same time, that form of it is not actually it. You know, we can't mistake it that it is just the mission, because we see the same problem. You know, was there as you get the Pharisees had formalized the mission to such a degree, the mission of, you know, Abraham and Moses to such a degree that it lost its actual life. Yeah. You know, and so then as a preacher, then Jesus came to re-invoke the life in the mission. So he was not, that he was, you know, speaking strongly on this formalization had gone to such an extent that it had been like Smarta. So then he was trying to bring about he wasn't trying to get rid of it, because he himself was a rabbi. He was a practicing rabbi, so he was part of the machinery. But he was trying to say, you know, breathe some life into it. It's not just following the rule is what gives you life. It's, you know, life comes from life, like that. Does that make some sense? An answer? Like that?
Yeah, in the New Testament, I think there's that statement about following the letter of the law instead of the spirit of the law.
Like that. Because following the letter is very easy. It's very managerially. Seems to be great. But then it throws one into always doing emergency management. Yeah. Or the spirit, you know, or if we want to put it into a more contemporary, some use, some reject nowadays, but you want to keep yourself in quadrant two, you keep to the spirit. And if you want to keep yourself in quadrant one, then you follow the letter. That's Covey. Though some now will say Covey's outdated and now it's systems. So, like this. The circus goes on. Yes.
Okay. Just remember that in the Vedas, Covey refers to Shukracharya.
Yes. He does have a shaved head. Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's right. Okay, so we'll end here. We'll continue again on Thursday. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Janitai Gaura Premanandi.